Let me ask you a difficult question. If you've been trading for 6 months, a year, or even 2 years, why do you think you're still not yet profitable? I've made so many videos on trading strategies and live trading. However, let me tell you the truth here. The reason most traders lose is not because of their strategies. I've been through this myself too. Let's be honest here. You probably already know the mistakes you've been making in your trading. You know that you rush into a trade because you're afraid of missing out on a stock that's running 100%. You also know that you didn't use stop losses, and you know you entered a trade blindly because you were following someone else's alerts. As a retail trader myself, I know that the biggest enemy to my trading account is me. Just like every single one of you, I got into trading years ago because of the money. So when I lose on a trade, I only focus on finding the next best strategy that can make my money back. Instead of studying my mistakes, journaling my trades, and improving my trading plan. But you guys know my story of how I became profitable over time. The answer is actually extremely boring yet simple. Is that I really forced myself to create a trading plan every single morning, and I stuck with it. But don't just take it from me. In this video, I want you to learn from the perspectives of some of the most successful traders out there. These traders have made tens of millions in their verified profits. But they all share one thing in common: following a trading plan that they created for themselves. These traders share a lot of valuable tips about what it really takes to become a profitable trader. So I strongly encourage that you be an open book, be ready to learn, and get ready to improve your own trading. Remember to give this video a thumbs up, and let's get started. The first trader I want to introduce you to is Lance Bredstein. He's a verified 8-figure trader who used to work in a prop firm. In the trading industry, Lance is known as the mentor of millionaires, as he has coached and guided many other famous traders. You're going to learn from Lance how to apply trader psychology to become a profitable price action trader. So breaking down that capitulation play, what should you look for on the daily chart so audience can kind of look at it? What do you look for on the daily chart, and what do you look for intraday for your entries and your executions and exit?
Yep. And so I think for a lot of this, you can almost separate it into two buckets. Mm-hmm. I want to find the stocks that were really, really, really steady, strong, or even exorbitantly strong that are then panicking. Or I want to find the stocks that are really, really weak and then are panicking and having their last flush out. And so one thing intellectually that's really, really important for traders to recognize is the stocks that you trade are so, so, so important. If you gave me a random list of tickers from the whole universe of stocks, I would never, ever be able to make money. I don't think any trader would be able to make money. You're only able to find edge in very specific tickers in very specific situations.
Yeah.
Some of those tickers with edge, or what we call in-play stocks, that might be because of a fresh news catalyst. That might be because of they're a new ticker IPOing. It might be because of a technical pattern. It might be because of different order flows due to imbalances and quad witching or something. And so we're really only trying to touch and trade tickers that are doing something exceptional. And so with these capitulation trades, I want to find like the top 5% of the strongest stocks that then out of nowhere tend to panic, or I want to find like the bottom 5% of the weakest stocks that are left for dead and no one wants to own anymore, and they're just being thrown out as unownable. And like one of the analogies I would give is last year, I think it was spring 22, Chinese stocks getting wrecked. Alibaba was getting wrecked, Pinduoduo was getting wrecked, and I think it was the JP Morgan analyst that essentially created the bottom by coming out with the research report saying that Chinese stocks are uninvestable. And the second you start to hear that rhetoric, so these were companies that I think Alibaba touched 300 something at the highs less than a year earlier, and now it was being puked out at around $80 a share in under a year. And that is a mega, mega cap company. And so what happens is that pendulum of say bullishness to bearishness, it was going so far bearish. Like, again, for an analyst to come out and say these stocks are uninvestable, it's literally your job as an analyst to figure out what the value is and advise people on investing them, not just say throw them all out, that's garbage. So that just speaks to how crazy bad that sentiment is at the time. And so if you read between the lines of what I just said, there's, we can start to suss out some of those variables, right? So first of all, there's sentiment. And I would say sentiment on those stocks was approaching negative 10. Mm-hmm. Then I also touched on the scale of the move, right? So these were super strong and popular, and Alibaba was at 300 or something. Now that was cut to, I think it was around $80 when this happened. So that's a massive move in a couple of months. And then if you were to take that specific move over the prior days, I think the stock went from like 100 to $70 or so in a matter of like a couple days or a week. So these are all really important variables to justify just how quick and extreme that move was. Now, another variable that I like to consider in these capitulations is volume. The volume on this was enormous. And so what's happening with volume is you get all these people that might have been long these shares since $300, $200, $150, and they're finally throwing in the towel. Mm. And you get this massive share turnover. So the average price, all the people that were ever going to sell, they're puking, and it's people now buying it at a way lower average price. And all the people that were going to hold on forever, they're still holding. So now you have new people in this vacuum where everybody that was ever going to sell just panicked and sold, and you've got new money in. And that average price of the holder goes way, way down. And that's so often that dynamic that creates a bottom. And guess what? When you're at peak bearishness and the stocks are uninvestable, there's only so much further you can go, right? Essentially, everything bad is being discounted. Mm-hmm. And so that's the concept. But then the question is, how do you actually trade that and execute? And so what a lot of people will notice is some of my systems, when you have in-play tickers, can be very, very simple. So if you're doing a swing trade in an in-play ticker, if something's selling off day by day by day, what I'll look for is a break of that trend. How do I define that break of trend? It might be as something as just getting above prior day highs. And because all of a sudden, if you're going down, 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 you have that first up bar, a lot of people are going to start to pile that on. And right when they do their end of day scans and they look over the charts, people are going to say, oh my God, like Alibaba has been down 5 days in a row. We just had a huge puke out, enormous volume. Now we close strong. And a lot of that is what creates that new feedback loop where it's people now saying, hey, maybe we put a turn in. And you're buying before all the confirmation and everything else. And so a lot of what I do is that concept on different timeframes. So even if this was intraday, if some stock pukes out intraday, I'm going to be looking for that break of prior bar highs. Then I do a very simple stop, which is just a trailing stop of break of prior bar lows.
Yeah, so that means as the stock breaks out higher, you're moving your stops out, up along the way, always in the money.
Yep.
Okay. And this is a day trade.
Yep. And it can be on any time frame, really. Mm-hmm. And so often what happens is when you have an in-play ticker, you tend to get stocks that really, really just melt lower in a trend. So that will really kind of waterfall over. And when something's trading down very cleanly, if it's a really clean down move, the cleanest down moves, once they reverse, tend to have the cleanest up moves.
Yeah.
And that's not a hindsight bias thing, right? You can see in real time how cleanly something is selling off. It's way different if something is zigzagging all over the place versus just this smooth waterfall. And so finding those smooth waterfalls that really, really panic, those are the ones that are going to be way more likely to have a clean bounce. And that's where if you're sticking to those tickers that are trading very cleanly, the probability of you being able to catch a bounce with a simple trailing stop like that is way, way, way higher. And so what I think surprises a lot of people is when I post my monthly top ops on Twitter each month, so many of these plays, by nature of them being an in-play ticker with a fresh news catalyst or making a really huge move, so often they respect that very simple rule of using prior bar lows or prior bar highs, because these are stocks that are very cleanly trending.
Oh, and that's where you get the V shape.
Exactly. Yeah,
the
exactly.
V shape down and V shape recovery.
Yeah. And so a lot of what I became famous on Twitter for is talking about buying on the right-hand side of the V. And what that means is I don't want to fight that trend as it's going lower. But once you get that prior, that break of the prior bar highs, and then you've got a turn and you're on the right side of the V, meaning we're now bouncing, that key difference is you're now going with that counter trend. And like, it sounds so cliche, but the simple saying, the trend is your friend, is so true. So when a stock is selling off and waterfalling, I don't want to fight that trend. But the second I can identify a bounce based on some of those rules for finding a turn, I'm then officially with that counter trend. Mm. And when you're with that counter trend, your probability goes up, you have a stop, and then so often trends go way further than you think, and that just means your reward is better.
Honestly, I learned a lot from his interview as well. Comment down below and let me know what you learned from Lance's perspectives on trading psychology and trading strategies. The next trader has a very unique trading style. Chris Verma is known for creating systematic trading strategies based on stats and data. You're going to learn how to become an efficient trader who focuses on trading the best setups while minimizing emotions and stress. Could you kind of walk us and our viewers through how you would create a profitable system and how many data sets you need to prove that it's worthwhile for you to put your capital in?
Right. Good question, but also a very difficult one. So what I like to do is run long-term back tests. So I'll have an initial idea. Like, let's say I want to short a stock that's going up 20% in 20 minutes. So at that point, what happens afterwards?
I see.
So if we track the last 100 times that occurred in the stock market, what were the averages, right? How far did it close from that point? How far did it spike from that point? And when we use the Excel spreadsheets, we can run back tests. And I have a lot of these templates on my website, so people can, you know, view that as well.
Okay.
And once we see that from the back test that, okay, this stock after spiking up usually fades off 10%, then we can find an edge through that, a mathematical edge. And from that, we can use Kelly criterion and other mathematical concepts to maximize our profits on these moves.
I see. So that's how you first discover a strategy.
Right.
Okay. And then you track, do you export all the data? Let's say, how many data sets do you need to kind of prove to yourself and analyzing the data that this thing has, let's say, 70% win rate, and you can make at least 20% yield? Like, how many data sets do you need from that?
Well, in terms of the sample size, I have more confidence in a larger sample and also over a larger period of time. So okay. I would say at least like 200 data points you want in your database to have a lot of confidence in it. And you also want it spanning over a 6-month period or longer.
I see.
Because if the data is too congested in one time frame, then maybe the market cycle was just very favorable for that pattern. And it was just a small time frame thing. But on a larger scale, it's not as effective.
Makes sense.
So that's why we look at yearly data, usually 4 years. I look back until 2019 to make sure that a pattern consistently performs and there's not too much fluctuation in the returns per year.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I noticed that in the summer months, small caps are generally, you might see a play like every couple of days. So in the summer months, that probably kind of skews your data. Or do you size down during particular months of the year and then size up more during the other times that fit your strategy and your data?
I would say my sizing is mostly based on the liquidity and the volume of the stock in play.
Okay.
So if it's a low volume play, then I'll try to keep my volume low because I don't want to stand out too much. Whereas if it's higher volume, then we can probably size in a little more and be more comfortable getting in and out of the position without causing any liquidity problems. Yeah, there's a lot of criteria that we look for, and volume is probably the most important one, especially that I've honed in on this year. And I'm trying to focus on lower volume plays because what I found is that the higher the volume, the more likely that it's going to be manipulated, it's going to be crowded. There's going to be a lot of games, a lot of action that is not favorable to a short seller.
I see.
So avoiding volume, in my opinion, is one of the biggest things that you can do as a short seller.
Okay. And does it help with your emotions? Do you feel like, obviously there will always be some emotions involved, but does it, do you feel like you stay a lot calmer trading, especially when you're sized up, but you're trading a strategy that you know has a high win rate?
Yeah, 100%. Because that's where my conviction comes from.
Yeah.
I found so many times that I would take a non-system trade, let's say out of boredom, or if I was, you know, revenge trading something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have the same conviction in that because there's no data behind it. I'm just kind of guessing.
That's when you get actually emotional because you know you don't have the edge. Oh, makes sense.
So I try to stay on course as long as I can and just follow my system. And so many days that I won't have a trade. And I'm okay with that, right? I think a good skill of a trader is being patient, being disciplined, and being able to sit on your hands when there's no action, right? Instead of forcing trades where you don't have an edge or you're just guessing.
Okay, traders, I hope you take Chris's advice seriously. Don't let your emotions get in the way and start forcing trades. If you resonate with his advice on trader psychology, please remember to drop a like on the video.
I noticed that you mentioned a lot of short selling. Mm-hmm. How many strategies are you kind of regularly playing right now? And are they all on the short side?
Yes. So we have basically three main strategies that I use. One is a parabolic short that I recently tweeted about. Mm. And this is the same strategy that I've used, you know, for years now and have had most of my success with this same pattern. So a stock going up very quickly usually has some mean reversion and reverses and comes down. Especially on low volume, small caps, they're very manipulated, so they can easily drop back down to where they came.
Okay.
Whereas if a more legitimate stock did that, a blue chip stock or a higher volume stock, you wouldn't expect the same reversal because the move might be more legitimate.
Okay.
So the main pattern that I do is shorting parabolic stocks. Okay. And then also I short gappers that are showing weakness. So let's say 100% gapper, if it starts fading from the open, then that kind of confirms the pattern that it's a weak stock, that it might be a dilution play. And then I might short it and then ride the wave down.
Oh, okay.
And one other pattern that I use is a backside short.
Okay.
So it's basically a parabolic stock that hasn't met the criteria for a frontside entry, but it may be valid on the backside to take for an entry. Let's say if it's up 50%, the volume is decreasing. And then it will trigger on our scanners and then we can enter and then and safely ride it back down.
So this super para setup on the short side, I also saw this on your Twitter that you, it's has an aggregated win rate of 84%.
That's right.
Okay. So did you, was this invented or you started tracking it this year and you started trading this setup?
So this is a setup that I introduced in April, and it's kind of an evolution of our original setup, which is the parabolic short, the P20, I called it.
Okay.
And it's basically over years of refining and data tracking that we've been able to improve upon our original idea, which was already a very strong strategy, a strong pattern. But we were able to improve upon that in terms of the metrics and the execution just from our own personal experience. Because as strong as a backtest is, it doesn't have that personal touch, right? It doesn't have your own personal experience trading it, like years and years of seeing the same patterns where you can pick up on small nuances. And that's what we were able to do with the Super Para. And since introducing it, the win rate has been incredible, 84%, and getting very high average gain per trade over 10%.
Oh, wow.
Even though the backtest would indicate a lot lower, because we've been able to incorporate some of our discretion into the trades and cut some plays that are, you know, not behaving properly. If they're not working right away, we're not getting that instant resolution, then we're losing patience on the trade and quicker to bail out. Whereas if it is paying instantly and it's working right away, then we're a little more patient because it's kind of showing that it's working, it's behaving properly, and that it's going to continue fading in our direction.
So on a high level, how would you teach someone, let's say someone approaches you today, how would you teach someone brand new this super para setup? Like on a high level, rough idea, what is this super para setup on the short side?
Right. So it's basically a strong parabolic move in under 30 minutes. So my criteria is roughly 30% in 30 minutes.
Okay.
So if a stock goes up that amount, at least that amount, has other certain variables that I can't really discuss. But that's the main criteria.
For the short.
For the short.
I see.
So as soon as it triggers that criteria on our Trade Idea scanners, which I've coded, it will trigger the entry price and, you know, the ticker symbol, the time, all of that information. And then all of that is given to you. You just enter that into your broker with a certain amount of shares that we use based on the Kelly criterion, which is optimal sizing.
I see.
And then we've introduced some more scaling now. So it's not a pure fixed stop, let's say 20% stop. There is some scaling, so we may add a little bit higher. So the approach is a little bit more complicated now, just so that we're a little harder to track our movements and algos can't really trade against us.
Yeah.
So that we, you know, can kind of avoid the typical short seller approach. So our approach now is that we just want to short these parabolic moves with our scaled entries.
Okay.
And then we're also taking covers with more discretion.
And you're looking for, let's say, 30% move up, you enter, and then you, what's kind of like the expected yield? Let's say a 20% move down, then you cover.
It also depends on how extended the stock is on the day.
Right.
If it's only up 30% on the day, then our profit target would be a bit lower because we can't expect it to drop 50% from there, right? But if it's up 100% on the day, then the profit targets would be a little wider because there is more expected fade if a stock is more extended.
Okay.
So all of these things we track from the data and we can say, all right, if a stock is more extended, should we hold for a 40% target or a 30% target? Or if it's just up 20, 30%, then should we shorten our targets? So everything is based on the large sample back tests.
And everything's predetermined. That's the beauty of systematic trading, right?
More or less, yeah.
Okay. So your entry's predetermined, your potential target depends on the percentage gap. Yeah. And the only thing that's discretionary is your ads and covers around those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah.
Even though I do not trade the same kind of short selling strategies as him, I personally think that Chris's approach to creating systems is a very important step, especially for new or developing traders who want to 1. Achieve consistency and 2. Reduce emotional stress from trading. If you think trading is complicated, then pay attention now. The next trader, Alex Tamiz, is known for simplifying trading with his own stock selection criteria. Alex focuses on selecting the right kind of stocks to trade and letting his trading plan do the rest. You're also going to learn the importance of being disciplined and following your own trading rules. I'm sure our audience are really curious about what your daily routine like as a trader. Can you share what the steps are with them?
Sure. I'll share it beginning to end. So first things first is when I was starting my trading, I would wake up at 4 a.m. I wake up at 4 a.m. every single day so that I know what stocks are moving, what news is moving, and it gives me enough time to like read the fundamentals and read the chart. Now, as I've kind of matured on my trading, I wake up around like 6 a.m. Wake up at 6 a.m. and the first thing I do, no matter what, every single day is I have to check my phone. I check my phone the first thing I do to see like if there's any stocks on my watch list from the previous day that are moving. After I check my phone, I have to drink espresso. I have to. I'm like a zombie in the morning.
Okay.
I cannot function without coffee in the morning. So I have my espresso. I get right up to my office. So as soon as I get to my office, open up my trading platform, and the first thing I do is I look at the top percentage gainers of the day.
Okay.
So I look at which stocks are gapping up the most on the day. After I look at the stocks that are gapping up the most, what I do is I read the news on each stock. Sometimes a stock has news, sometimes a stock doesn't have news.
Okay.
If a stock doesn't have news, it's a pretty big edge because most of the time it doesn't have a catalyst to keep it up. So if a stock does have news, I'll look at the news and I'll read it and see what it sounds like. Oftentimes, a lot of people don't realize that companies PR the same thing. So I try to cross-reference to see if this company has ever PR the same thing.
Recycle the headlines. Okay. Correct. Yeah. Okay.
And based on that, that's a different level of an edge, right? Okay. So first thing is we look at what stocks gapped up. Then we look at the news. Then what I do is I look at the fundamentals of the stock. Okay. So these days, there's a bunch of different tools out there to like use to help with fundamentals. I use Dilution Tracker because they're pretty simple. Look at, you know, if they have any outstanding warrants, if they have like an ATM, if they have a shelf. So I try to get as much information on a stock as I can before I even look at the chart. So after I get that information from the fundamentals and I say, all right, this stock is gapping up, this stock has a news catalyst, this stock has, you know, something in the fundamentals or the filings that kind of looks a little bit sketchy, then I look at the chart. And like we mentioned earlier, is the chart one of those daily charts where it wicks up and wicks down?
Yeah.
Or is it one of those charts that's like, you know, it looks like a breakout is about to happen. Is it like gapping? Like, how is it gapping up? Is it gapping up into previous resistance? Is it gapping up into blue skies? Or is it one of those wick up and wick down? So depending on that, that's going to be something that I try to narrow down as well. If it's one of those stocks that's gapping up into all-time highs, I don't want to short it. I don't want to short it because there's no previous resistance. But if it's a stock that wicks up and wicks down on day one, good. If it's a stock that's coming into previous resistance, good. Then after that, I pretty much plot out my entries and exits based on support and resistance. I keep it really simple. So these days, a lot of stocks are moving pre-market. And by the time you wake up pre-market, the chart is already kind of formed a little bit. So I like to use those pre-market levels as my potential resistance and support. So I'll just draw my resistance, I'll draw my support to be able to visualize it on the chart. Now, these days, there's different pumpers, different discords, different this, different that are moving stocks as well. So I have friends and other people in like all these other discords that let me know if people are like pumping different stocks.
Okay.
So pretty much, find what stocks are gapping up the most. Read the news, read the filings, look at the daily chart, draw my support and resistance. What I've realized in the world of shorting is every single day there's usually a hot stock moving. There's a stock with tremendous volume. There's a stock that has all the attention. There's a stock that all the traders in the chat rooms and all the people on Twitter are talking about. That stock, I call the hot chick of the day. And I call it the hot chick of the day because it's okay. I call it the hot chick of the day because if you go to a bar and the hot girl is there, all the guys are going to give her attention. Right?
Oh,
all the girls
guys.
Are going to give her attention. And she's not going to say yes to any of those guys. She's going to dodge and dive and duck and thing. But she has a friend.
She's just getting the free drinks.
She's getting the free drinks. She's getting all the attention. But she has her friend that like may not be like as good looking.
Oh my God.
But like she, like if a guy talks to her, she's going to talk and engage and have fun and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of finding the hot stock of the day, the hot chick of the day to trade that everyone's going to lose money on, I look for her friend, right? I look for the side stock, the stock that may not have as much volume, that already came down pre-market, right? The chart is already formed pre-market. And I'm basically waiting for that stock to have a bounce into pre-market resistance rather than to short, rather than looking for that hot stock that keeps making higher lows and higher lows and higher lows and higher lows and ends up parabolicking, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of short sellers, they have this fallacy that the higher the percentage gap is on the stock, the more I want to short it. Whereas sometimes it could just keep going and going and going because it has all the attention.
Yeah.
So for me, I focus on the stock that already has made a topping action pre-market. It's already topped out pre-market, and I want to short that bounce into previous resistance. That's my bread and butter go-to setup every single day. The problem is that most short sellers, they go for that hot stock that kind of goes to resistance and then consolidates and shoots up.
Yeah.
It shoots up because it has all the volume, all the attention, all the algos, all the everything. So as a short seller, I do not want to short the hot stock of the day.
Yeah.
I want to focus on the side stock that not as much people are watching, that doesn't have as much attention, because those stocks, to me, have the most edge and the most capacity because there's less competition. Whereas the hot stock of the day, it's short crowded.
Yeah.
There's way too much competition. Yeah. So that's what's been helping me these days.
So you're basically risking, in this case, in this particular strategy, are you risking around that pre-market highs area?
Correct. Okay. So I've realized as a short seller that your ultimate stop, no matter what, always has to be mandatory pre-market high of the day. Because if it breaks pre-market high of the day, it has the ability to keep going. So as a short seller, no matter what, the rule, no matter what, is if it breaks pre-market high, you have to stop out. You have to stop out. Don't wait for it to see if it's going to reject. Don't wait. Don't do anything. Get the hell out if it's going against you. But what's really good is on these side stocks is the pre-market high, after it's kind of made its initial move and come down, the pre-market high is so far away that like you have plenty of room to make money. Whereas the hot stock of the day, it could just really relatively quickly break that and just halt up.
Yeah.
Right. I've been caught in so many scenarios where the hot stock of the day that was gapping up 85%, 150% goes higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
Whereas a stock that gapped up 40% ended up closing red because no one focused on it. They're like, oh, like this stock is not going to do anything. Like, whatever, I'm not going to touch it. I'd rather focus on this stock because I can make more money on it. But that's not how it works. So I like to focus on the stocks that are forgotten, the side stocks that people aren't really paying attention to.
I also realized that since short selling became more and more popular, like you said earlier, any stocks that's trading around 80%, 90%, 100% that's able to hold around there, they tend to go higher.
Yes.
Because that attracts all the short sellers you were talking about, and they get squeezed and then it goes higher.
And the algos are the algos just got way smarter. I think ever since 2020, the pandemic, I think they got so smart because in my opinion, when the entire stock market was crashing in like 2022-ish, like 2021, 2022, a lot of the hedge funds couldn't make money. they couldn't make money because everything was going down.
Yeah.
So I think that they programmed their algos to start focusing on small cap stocks to like start making up that difference in P&L that they were doing, because now there's so much algorithmic trading in small caps. You could see it nonstop. The volume on these small cap stocks is absolutely ridiculous sometimes. And I think it's all algorithmic trading, just getting smarter and smarter and smarter.
If that's the case, do you think it has gotten a little bit tougher to trade small cap stocks then? Because it didn't used to be like that when the bigger funds or like algos were involved. So how has it changed to modern day now?
I think every year trading gets more difficult. I think every year that you wait, it gets more difficult. Because like you think about, I mean, when we first started trading, most of the time, like I remember seeing people that would just short a stock at market open and then cover it at market close and it would just go straight down.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore. Or like during the pandemic, you would just buy any stock and it would just go straight up.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore. So I think the market has a way of just getting harder and harder and harder and cycling out more people and more people and more people. But
interesting.
To your point is I think that now, because most people are in the short selling world, the stock squeezes that we're getting are a lot more ridiculous. Yeah. They're a lot crazier. They're a lot more insane. So that actually gives veteran short sellers more of an edge, because the newbie short sellers are driving these stock prices up, whereas the veterans are waiting and getting even better entries. Yeah. So I think that if you are a veteran, someone that's been doing it for a longer time, I think you have even more of an edge, because there's a lot of dumb short sellers driving up these stocks higher for more veteran traders to take advantage of it. I have a lot of advice because I made every single mistake that you could possibly imagine. Yeah. So number one is make sure to set a max loss with your broker, auto liquidation. And the way that you set that is, let's say you're making $100 a day trading.
Yeah.
Your max loss auto liquidation at the broker level should be no more than 2 days worth of trading. So it should be, if you make $100 a day, your max loss should be 200. That way you never lose more than 2 days worth of work.
Yeah.
Whereas other people, they set their max loss at like 1,000. All of a sudden they lost 2 weeks worth of work. It doesn't make sense. So number one is set your max loss auto liquidation at 2 days of your normal day. Number two is set your max size. So set a max position size on your account. The best way to do it is like, I mean, everyone has different equations, but like usually like a fifth of your equity. So like whatever your equity is divided by five, that should be your max size, max size, max size. Mm-hmm. Number three is use hard stops, hard market stops.
Okay.
When I first started trading, I didn't know what stops were. No one taught me. I had to figure it out on myself. I would manually do it. And every single time I'd be a deer in headlights. I'd freeze. I'd be like, I'm going to stop out at $5. All right.
You don't really follow it.
Now it's like 510. Shit. And then it's like 520. Okay. Like if it goes back down to 510, then all of a sudden it halts up to six and I'm dead.
Yeah.
Right. So use hard market stops. If you use a limit stop, you're not going to get executed.
Yeah. All right. The next trader needs no introduction. Stephen Dux is a verified top performing trader. Many of you might have seen his crazy profits in a single trading day. But what you should learn from Steven is his unique method to track stock market statistics and how he uses that data to improve his entries, exits, and position sizing. So what kind of statistics? I know you mentioned that earlier in the beginning. What were you tracking to realize, okay, I need to focus on this one strategy or these two strategies? What kind of specific criteria were you looking at?
First of all, I mean, when I went in there, it's a there's a lot of stuff to track. You can't, most people go in with, okay, well, there's a lot of stuff. I have no idea what to track, right? So you start narrow stuff down. Let's say we have a ticker that's 20 million market cap, 3 million float, very similar action, put them together. How much volume they traded to see there's any similar actions or similar behavior. Or if it's going parabolic or start going midday or gapped up in the pre-market. So pretty much you want to categorize very similar market, very similar float and the gap up percentages. Categorize them into one section. Try to find the conclusion of if volume changed, what happened? If flow changed, what happened? So you kind of put a fixed criteria on all pretty much everything. And there's only one factor that's different.
I see.
So you will be able to kind of tell, okay, next time, similar flow, similar market cap, if the volume is different, I'm supposed to do this.
I see.
So you need a massive amount of statistics to find, I don't know, I have, I think at the beginning I had 25 sections.
Okay.
With market cap between 0 to 10 million, okay, flow between 0 to 1, gap up over 50%, or market cap between 0 to 20, or flow between 1 to 3. See, this time it's different, but with gap up percentage with 50%. So you only have the flow difference.
I see.
And once you only have the flow difference, with very similar volume throughout the day, so you can kind of see how much did the spiking percentage changed.
Oh, so okay.
That's one method of how to figure out what to track.
Okay. Let me sum up that really quick, because you just mentioned a lot of things. I want to make sure our audience understand your method. The first method you mentioned really clearly. Yeah. So essentially, you're trying to find the first method. Let's say you narrow down, let's say 10 stocks that, you know, are low flow, they have similar volume, and then you look at different categories like the volume, pre-market volume, you know, percentage spike after open, and you look at what they have in common.
Yeah.
And what's the outlier criteria, whether it be super low float or super high volume that cost, potentially have cost that one stock to stand out among the most.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah. Okay.
First criteria. And second is, second way to be able to track statistics is you want to focus on volume specifically.
Hmm.
Because people are behind computers trading the tickers, right? So yeah, every shares they trade means one shares. And well, of course there's algos and hedge fund involved in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to think, there's one thing that the hedge fund that won't do is they take the flow. So basically they buy the entire flow.
Okay.
And first of all, they have to file to the SEC. That's you know, not very convenient. That's what they don't want to do. And second, if you want to pump the stock, you don't want to own the entire flow. Hmm. Because eventually, once you sell, you're basically playing with yourself.
Yeah, there's no one else to sell to.
There's nobody else to sell. Yeah. You need the liquidity. So you do not want to occupy the entire flow, you want to retail to go in there,
yeah,
and pump the stock up, and they sell into the retails, and retails loses money. So once you track enough multi-day runners, there's actually a very similar number that how much money can retail put into a ticker.
Okay, based on float or market cap?
Based on market cap.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's another way to track statistics based on how to really short into multi-day runners.
So in that case, let's say hypothetically speaking, your second method you just mentioned, let's say based on, I don't know, 50 mil market cap, retail can only, let's say from that tracking, retail can only get up to, you know, 10% of that market cap, and then that's the ideal time to short?
Yes. Yes, okay. But more accurately, you want to be more accurate is you want to use the volume times the average traded price on that day. If it meets the threshold of how much money that retail can pour into stock, that means stock will go down next day.
Because basically, the stock has reached the maximum threshold that retail can push up to,
yes,
the maximum percentage.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of that way.
Or dollar amount. There's a lot of method. I can go. I'll do three. There's another way to track statistics, which I personally use, which will be volume comparison. Is that you want to? So there's three different categories you want to do. You want to track. First of all, is to be able to correctly tracking resistance.
Okay.
And a lot of people see, okay, well, there's a resistance that traded 50 million volume on a price of 3. And next time I want to short against with that $3 resistance, right?
Okay.
And so let's see, for example, let's say 50 million volume, that means 5 people. Let's say 5 people bought a stock at 3. 2 months later, stock instantly dumped 90%. Everybody wants to get out. Because, well, if I get out, I'll be down 90%. What's the point of me selling right now since I'm already down 90%?
Mm-hmm.
So the first reaction that when stock pushes back to 3, right, everybody wants to sell.
Okay.
That's their instant reaction. That's human psychology right there. Yeah. So, and But here comes a problem, because we're dealing with low floats. So if the stock only have 3 million float and has 15 million volume in there, and that doesn't mean that there's 15 million resistance in there, because there's only 3 million volume, 3 million float, sorry.
Okay. From previous, let's say, charts, the resistance from like weeks ago.
Yes.
Doesn't have that much volume is what you're saying.
No, it doesn't have the flow in there.
Okay.
That doesn't have 15 million flow.
Okay.
So if you want to, let's say every share is a backholder, 15 million shares means 15 million backholder.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a 15 million shares, only 3 million flow, there's only 3 million backholders.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
So next time when you try to short into resistance, that's the statistics you want to track, because you are shorting a 50 million resistance, but there's only 3 million backholders in there.
Okay.
So there's a very possible chance that stock can push through that resistance because there's only 3 million flow.
Oh, I see.
So a lot of people are trying to just short based on how much volume that's against the 50 million. That's a very interesting statistics to track.
Okay.
And you can't, once you track that statistics, you can help you avoid a lot of traps.
I see. Traps. So I think the first two methods you mentioned helps you find a potential short entry. The third one helps you avoid getting squeezed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
There's many, many, many stuff that I came up in the last couple of years.
What about you? Are you tracking any kinds of stats yourself? Make sure to share with other traders down below. Do you think that's the reason why you pretty much stick with small caps? Because when it comes to large cap stocks, there's a lot less of these inefficiencies, right? And a lot of the patterns, the stats you track, do they apply to other kinds of stocks?
No, they don't. The limitation is, except 2021, but the limitation is you cannot go beyond market cap that's above 300 million. Initial market cap. So if the stock starts to spike starting with 300 million market cap, then it doesn't work.
Okay.
But start less than 300 million, let's say started around 100 million, then goes all the way to a couple billion, it works.
Oh, so you're talking about, let's say, the first day of the run where the stock already started from.
Yes.
Oh, so anything above 300 mil, that doesn't count. That's still categorized as small cap, right?
Yes, still categorized
as small cap. But you just won't trade it.
I just won't trade it.
Oh, so how you pick your stocks to trade is by volume, and the market cap has to be below 300 mil.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And what kind of volume are you looking for when you are scanning for stocks to trade each morning?
Really depends. I mean, volume highest, the higher the better.
Okay.
I mean, I do avoid first green day, very crowded volume.
Okay.
Avoid that type of tickers. But once they exhaust their volume, then higher the volume, the better. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. What about percentage gapper?
Percentage?
Is there a point of like too high or like too low?
If it gaps above 200, I would say, it's probably a bit more ridiculous one. It's gaps above like 500%, then it looks a little bit fishy to me. The ideal range should be between 100 to 150. 100 to 170, yeah.
Percent. Oh, okay. Like it has to have gapped up that much for you to be interested in trading them?
Not interested, but more comfortable trading them.
Okay.
Gap up 500%, I'm still interested in trading them. I just want to be a little bit cautious. How to size in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I get that, you know, 100% gainers are very normal in 2020 and 21. But what about in 2022 and 23? How are you selecting stocks then? Do you change your criteria?
There's still gappers that's above 100%.
Okay.
Very few.
Yeah, very, very.
We have, let's see, MMV. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
When gap 200%. Then, not many. We had VC, IG, and all those biotechs that only gapped up like 80%.
Mm.
So, yeah, above 100% is my highest winning percentage.
Okay.
Less than 70%, if it doesn't have a resistance, And on first green day, and it's a biotech, yeah, that's a no-go.
So you also don't want to trade, try to avoid biotechs?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Is there a reason why?
Oh, every time when I trade biotechs, I lose. I mean, it's, and I track statistics on right. it, I still lose.
Oh, okay.
So I've been fighting biotechs for many years now, and it's sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but by the end of the day, you lose money.
Right.
And doesn't really matter if you're going short, if you're going long.
Yeah.
Biotechs are very hard to predict. They do not follow small cap statistics at all.
Oh, interesting. So not only do you track those individual stocks or sectors or like the individual stock criteria, you also track your own performance trading these stocks.
Yeah, I track everything. Yes.
Oh, okay.
How much the stock will drop to, at what percentage, to what cent, I can get to that sometimes.
Okay.
That's how I'd be able to bottom tick and top tick.
As you can see from all of the trader interviews today, no one trader trades the same, but they all have their unique trading plans that work for their trader psychology and their risk tolerance. I want to say thank you guys so much for leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your support means a lot to us.